Give me one second.
I'd like to call this meeting to order. It is a special meeting of the Board of Trustees of the Kenyatta Independent School District. It is May the 2nd, 2012. It is 6:01 p.m. And Tony, would you be so kind as to call roll, please?
Mrs. Cousins? Here. Mr. Carmel?
Here.
Mrs. McGonigal?
Here.
Mrs. Mendelson?
Here.
Mrs. Kingfellman?
Here.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Present.
Mrs. Strauss?
Here.
Item 2 is the consent agenda, and the administration recommends approval as presented.
Is there anyone who would like to take any of these items off of the consent agenda for consideration? Or discussion, anything? No? Then, Tony?
Mrs. Cousin,
can I
say a motion?
Oh,
I make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
I'll second.
Mrs. Cousins?
Yes.
Mr. Carmel?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendelson?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Strauss?
Yes.
Item 3A is presentation, review, and possible action regarding district policies for student placement, audit, and review of transfer credits, and testing policies and procedures. Mr. Fry?
Good evening, Mr. Fry. Thank you for coming.
Good evening, President Searles, members of the board, Dr. Murphy. I'm going to invite a couple of colleagues up here this evening, the right side saddle. Well, thank you for having me this evening. I've been asked to talk to you about our processes and procedures regarding students who are enrolling in our campus. These are out of state and out of country enrollees. We have a policy in place, an FDA legal, which guides us in how we have to approach this. It doesn't talk about the procedural components, and I'm going to walk you through that in just a moment. But what it does say is that we have to use a variety of measures to evaluate credits and coursework that is coming from outside of the state of Texas. As you know, if a student comes from inside the state of Texas, it's straight across. Everything is, you know, apples to apples, so to speak. So we've developed local procedures at our campus, and I am pleased to say that I feel that these are very good procedures that have been in place since I was there as an assistant principal. That's 6 years that we've been doing this, to my knowledge, probably to some extent even beyond that, but I'll speak to the time that I've been a part of. So what I'd like to do is kind of give you a picture of how this process works when a student comes to enroll at Kenyatta High School, so you can walk through the process, so hopefully I can answer some questions before they become questions. When a student comes to our campus, the first thing they do is they complete the registration packet, which is about 50 pounds of paper. And that is brought to our registrar. And what our registrar does is assesses that to make sure that the student is a resident of Kenyatta and has done all the appropriate stuff. When it's told to her or it becomes apparent in what we call walk-in papers, anything that they have in their hands from prior schools, that the student is from out of country, and typically for us it's from Mexico, what she does is she contacts our ESL facilitator who comes in and down to meet with the student and their parents and their guardians. And what we try and do in that first initial process is our ESL facilitator gauges what information we have right on hand to evaluate with the student. And this is before technically they're even in the system. She makes an appointment with the student to do this what's called Stanford English Language Proficiency Assessment. And what we do is we use to determine what proficiency of reading, writing, speaking, and listening skills in the English language that the student has. And so she will do that, set that appointment to meet with the student. While that's taking place, our registrar and our transcript clerk have done an official request for records from the sending school, the prior school. And as you can imagine, sometimes there can be some complications with receiving those or communicating with a certain school. We are fortunate because we have pretty good rapport with the schools in Mexico, but depending on the state, complicates things a little bit. But when that student, so once we've done that, and we've got the registration paper, the student goes into our system, which is, for us, is Teams. And at that time, the student becomes a student at Canyatillo High School in the system. And I know there's been some misinformation, or I guess maybe some misunderstanding I'd like to clarify on the classification. When a student walks in and they have nothing with them, nothing official, they come in with zero credits. Zero credits per our student handbook. Page 46 says zero credits equals a freshman and ninth grader. And so what happens is that the system automatically holds them as a ninth grader. It's not a system where we say, okay, you're going to be a ninth grader for, you know, specified amount of time. It's where they're holding until we have something to validate what grade level they need to be placed in. So we test the student, and whatever walk-ins, can I get the overhead? Put up. Okay, so I don't know if you can see this, and hopefully you have a handout of this. You know, when we're looking at this whole picture of the student, and again, we're evaluating the entire picture of what is best for the student. Our goal and our job is to scaffold their academic and their English proficiency skills. So what we're looking at is making sure that we're doing that appropriately. So when we get in, we take the results of the SELF, the Stanford English Language Proficiency Assessment. We bring in whatever documentation that we can get as far as official transcripts. What you need to understand is based on our evaluations of coursework, primarily from Secundaria in Mexico, there's not always an equivalent in Texas. And we have got to make sure in our evaluation process that we are being really clear about that the course that they're taking there has the same rigor and is aligned to the text in order so that it is fair to them and fair to the students who are currently enrolled in those courses. So that's a really detailed process. And, you know, one of the things that I want to point out is that, you know, when students come in, this is all, we do this with this individual student. What's that? It's flowing. We're talking that this is taking a couple of days for the initial placement of the student until we get those you know, formal official transcripts. We've got to look at the entire picture of the student, the current standing that they're coming from the foreign country, their proficiency from beginner, emergent, intermediate, to proficient. And all of those, you know, because one of the things is we've got to make sure that we place the student in the best opportunity to be successful. I am a strong believer in being real upfront with kids and saying, you know, we want to put you in a place where you can be successful. We don't want to put them with their head underwater and then say, well, just try and paddle and then we'll throw you a lifeline and see if we can bail you out. We want to put them with the greatest toehold on being successful. So language plays an important role in that. The credits that we will look to transfer in, and then the age of the student. You know, we have instances where we have older students and we have to be considerate of their needs. You know, we have a 19-year-old student who has very, you know, if few or if any credits. You know, we really try and talk to those kids again about best opportunity, best case scenarios, what opportunities are available, not only in Canyatillo or Canyatillo High School, but in El Paso, for their, you know, for them to receive their education and move forward. So, again, this process is really, the hands in this are our ESL facilitator, often an administrator, usually me, a grade level counselor. The grade level counselor that works with the particular students is not the ninth grade counselor unless we believe that the student will be in ninth grade. It might be the 10th grade counselor or the 11th grade counselor. We try and make projections until we have the official transcript and have done that on where we think that student will belong, and we try and get the person connected to the student who will be working with them throughout. So, once we have the official transcripts and we do the evaluation, and then we determine, okay, this is the course, these are the credits that we see, these are the credits that will match up with the text, and these ones, based on all of these factors, this is what we are able to give credit for. And we're real upfront with kids and their parents. We don't exclude any of them out throughout the process. They're in this process all along. We use a guide that, when kids come in and they're going to be placed as freshmen because they have completed the eighth grade, or because they have maybe done part of the ninth grade, or at times because they've done ninth grade in Mexico, but the courses are not equivalent to us. When a student is placed in ninth grade, we're very careful with the credits that we give them, that they align, and we've set a guide as about of 2.5 credits. And I'll tell you why 2.5 credits. 2.5 credits is when we add our freshmen can earn up to 9 credits on our 10 period day. Okay, we double block Algebra 1, so the most that they can earn is 9 credits. Okay. 9 plus 2.5 is 11.5 credits. What that does is that keeps that student from leapfrogging over their 10th grade year and becoming juniors. Our goal is not to avoid AYP. Our goal is not to avoid accountability with these students. Our goal is to put these kids in the best place for success by allowing them to get the credits that they brought from Mexico, but scaffolding their academic and language skills. And then when we put the two together and they have a successful first year at Canyon II High School, which the majority of them do, they go on second year to be a 10th grader. And I would be remiss to know that part of the question about this is whether or not Canyon II High School is ducking AYP with our foreign students coming in. And the fact is that we're placing them based on a very comprehensive assessment and a very comprehensive, holistic look at the picture of their language skills, their credits, and what we can bring, and then making sure that we put them on the course, that the cohort that they're in is the cohort they will graduate with. If we put them off cohort and they fall behind, y'all know what happens if a student falls behind 1 year behind the grade of what they believe is the grade they should be in, we've just given them a life sentence. They fall behind 2 years, we've given them a death sentence. And I do not believe in that for any kid, especially kids that already have a challenge of learning a language. So when we put this together and we determine that a student is a ninth grader based on these expectations and this process, or if a student comes in and they've got extensive credits and we look at their language levels and we look at all these things and we say, you know, this student is a 10th grader or the student is an 11th grader. What you need to know is that predominantly what we're talking about is ninth graders because of the way that the Mexican school system works. So, you know, I'm not trying to leave out 10th and 11th graders, but what I'm saying is that the majority of these kids fall into that ninth grade category because of our alignment with the courses that they're taking in Mexico. Okay? This whole process, getting the student in and putting them in the system and giving and testing them and putting them in a tentative schedule is a matter of a few days. The process of getting their official transcripts, our goal is 20 days, 20 business days a month. Okay, that's our goal. Why 20 days? Well, 20 days is when we have an official legal meeting, what's called, you know, our language, let me make sure I do this, our LPAC, Language Proficiency Assessment Committee, comes together, that's teachers, that's parents, that's administrators, that's counselors, and we assess the placement to make sure it's appropriate. And we vote as a committee. And so our goal is 20 days. Now, nothing says that 20 days is what you have to do. Legally, if we miss 20 days and the kid sits in there beyond 20 days, we've broken no laws. But what we've done is we will make sure that we do assurances where we're asking for the transcripts, and we protected that. So I want to make sure, you know, if the student sits in ninth grade because we've not received an official transcript beyond that 20 days, you know, we've not broken any law, but we have made sure that we've done the process thoroughly and we've done really due diligence with that individual student. I want to point out that we have a kind of a unique situation at Kenyatta High School. We have 10 periods, 5 each day. If you go to other schools, they may have 4 and 4, they may have 6 in a day. Just by the nature of our schedule, students are able to, if they take everything they're supposed to take, 10 credits in a year, 10 credits their next year, they have 20, it takes 24 to graduate. So the process that I'm talking about evaluating and examining students' placement and their grades, is not just about foreign students, it's about students that have been at Kenyatta High School their entire lives. Because we have to make sure that kids are on the track that they need to be on to graduate on time. There are times when kids do move from one grade to, you know, skip over a grade. Let me give you an example. We have a ninth grader who goes through their freshman year and it takes 6 credits to become a sophomore. That student falls short and gets 5.5. The student remains a freshman for the second year. That student then gets a wake-up call from mom, dad, or whoever, grandparent, and gets 10 credits their sophomore year. Now they're sitting on 15.5. 15.5 pushes them above the 12 that are required. That student now rejoined their class as a junior and never had a sophomore year. That has a tendency to happen. It happens at times, but the fact is our goal is that our kids stay with their class, what's called the cohort. Stay with your cohort. And, you know, we rarely see it at a ninth grade level because ninth grade, they skip over unless they're reclassified. Because once we go through this process with a student from a foreign country, they're placed in that at 2.5 credits and they are a freshman because we've through this process, designated that they're a freshman. And so, but the opportunity for acceleration is the same beyond that for all of our kids. Whether they want to be a 3-year grad, whether, you know, all of those opportunities are still available. So the 10-period day, we have to evaluate that and watch that closely. I just want to make sure I haven't left anything out. Have I left anything out that you can... So once the LPAC comes through and they reevaluate what is done in the process and they voted on that, we confirm that the student is what classification? 9th grade, 10th grade, 11th grade, 12th grade. They vote on that based on these factors of the credits and their language skills and what the state of Texas says that we're allowed to do. And under FDA legal, it's under also an FD legal. It's in there in both places. The Texas Administrative Code is there that says we can do this. We can evaluate these kids on these parameters. So, and then we place them in. Their credits go in into the bank. We our outstanding registrar puts them in, and they become whatever grade the credits dictate they are. 0 to 5.5 is a freshman. 6 to 11.5 is a sophomore. 12 to 17.5 is a junior. Anything above 18, they become a 12th grader. And so we use that, and at that time they become, their schedule is set. If we have to put them in ESL classes based on their language skills, we've done that through the LPAC. We've put their grade level in, it's locked in, and that student is now no longer a student from a foreign country. That student is a Kansas City High School Eagle. And so I, is there anything else that I... So at this point, I'd like to just offer or have you guys ask me any questions that you might, clarification on this process.
Does the board have any questions? Mr. Frye?
I have a couple. One, regarding what the current policy that we have in place, and I believe the board approved that policy in 2006, if I'm reading correctly, on the FDA local. Is there any districts have the same policy or similar policy within the area or even the state?
Well, the challenge to your question is that TA do not have any regulation saying, you know what, this is the schedule that you need to follow. So it's, and since they don't have a regulation, every school district can set up their own regulations based on different factors. Some school district can decide if we just want to look into the credit for Mexico. If they put mathematics in Mexico, we don't need math in here, without taking into consideration several factors. I know that most of the school districts in Texas, and you can refer to the LUSHA website, it's a UT Austin organization that receives a lot of support from DA. That most of the school districts in Texas, they place their EL students in that grade. In the area of El Paso, most of the school districts in that area will follow best practices and place them in that grade. But it's depending on, it's open to every school district.
So I'm asking, like, on our local policy, which we created, we have the FDA legal, which is the legal, and it's based by the state, what's required. We created our local policy in 2006, which is the process that was just explained. There's two-part question to that. One, is there similar school districts that have a similar policy like ours that do the, they place them in ninth grade? Pretty much that's the standard. They place them in ninth grade and then we assess them, and we assess them and try to place them within the 20-day period. Is there similar districts that do that? And then the other question is there districts that have policies that are different from ours, like El Paso or any other district that has it?
20 days, let me answer. 20 days is the based on the LPAC manual. When we receive an EL, an English learner in a district, we only have 20 days in order to conduct the LPAC. So 100% of the school district in Texas, they need to follow the 20 days.
And really, I think if you look at FD local, the FD local is where I think it hits on this process. That was 125-2011. Before graduate, this shall validate by testing or other evidence that any course taken by a student at a non-accredited public, private, or parochial school meets the state board requirements. So what I know to be true from my discussions and also from the information from our ESL facilitator works closely with Isleta Socorro, is that this process that we talked about is similar throughout. What we've found is that every school district has had to make adjustments based on the best need, based on the needs of their kids. You know, we had situations where we were looking at a math and algebra 1 credit that we were giving them based on a mathematics that they were taking, and we're looking at it, and our kids were absolutely blowing out, failing. Everything in math, they were failing the tax, they were failing the courses, and we set them up and they were drowning. And so what we did was we came up with some local evaluations, assessments to determine some things. Socorro does the same. They use this similar processes to determine if a student should receive credit. Can I say that they put them in the same place or not? I don't know. Because this is, we're talking about an individualized process. Mm-hmm. And if they're doing it right, like I believe we are, then they're doing it individually in the best interest of the kid.
And I guess administration knows we're strict on policy. One of the major issues, two more questions, and then I'll let some of my colleagues ask questions, and I might have some more after that. But one, have we, since we've created this policy and since you've been here, Mr. Fry, have we deviated from that policy?
No, the policy, because it's pretty spread, it's wide open. I mean, it guides us. It doesn't tell us step by step by step, you have to do this and this. We have absolutely stayed within the expectations of the board in this policy in our assessment of students and their transfer credits from foreign countries.
Okay, and just a follow-up question, being that you've pretty much served within two different administrations and one interim administration, there's no deviation within the current policy?
There's no deviation. As a matter of fact, Dr. Murphy and I have never even discussed this policy until recently. And this has been something that's been in place as long as I've been there. I've never been directed to do anything. We've done what we've done because I believe it's been effective and it's been a best practice and a best thing for Kennedy 2 High School kids.
And I guess that's one of the most important things is that, you know, knowing that the board is strict on policy and that we create those high expectations when we create policy and try to follow best practices when doing that and knowing no deviation or nothing, I think it brings light to some of the issues that have been raised recently. So I might ask a couple more questions. Well, let me just ask one more, just on the monitoring. Once a student is placed, they come in, they're placed, the 20-day, they have an LPAC. Some students, depending on the rigor of curriculum they received from Mexico or another country, might be placed in different areas. Is that correct?
Yes.
Do we keep on reevaluating those students to assess?
Absolutely. Antonio talked about that process.
The LPAC, we meet every 6 weeks, and then we evaluate. We have an outstanding form that we need to keep each one of the students in the form. One of the forms is that grade that they received during those 6 weeks. So based on discipline record, of course, plus the academic performance of the student during those 6 weeks, the ALPA committee, we just plan support activities of what is the best support that we need to provide to those students, like tutoring or after school, support, meeting with parents, anything that we need to do in order for those kids not to fail that class in the next 6 weeks. But we meet every 6 weeks to evaluate all of the ELs in each one of the schools, not only the high school, the five elementaries and the two high schools, and the two middle schools.
So depending on the student that we receive and what level they might be at, we're continuing to reevaluate and assess on whether the barriers that they have. Some students might be able to catch up a lot faster than some others, and then other students are placed in different levels.
Absolutely. So we are because the LPA committee, like Mr. Fry mentioned before, is most of the teachers, ELs teachers, I mean, part of the LPA committee. So we listen to them. We listen to them. They can come and say, you know what, Antonio needs this and this and this. I mean, he's following this because this and this. This is lucky.
Okay.
Yes, we do.
You know, and I will tell you this. I think that what we do is exemplary. This situation is where these kids are Absolutely. You know, you can say tracked, and tracked has a negative connotation. These kids are monitored, but they are absolutely supported in both their language acquisition and their academic skills. And it's a, if one trips, somebody's there to say, this is what they tripped over, and how do we remove that obstacle, or how do we help them avoid that obstacle? So I'll tell you this. Honestly, I wish, in a lot of ways, that we could have this in place and for every single kid in the high school, for all 1,575, that everyone had this close of a monitoring. I think it's pretty unbelievable.
And the good thing, thanks to my colleagues and the administration, we've continued to monitor that and looking at strengthening that when it comes to cohort and stuff like that.
You look at the number of kids that are left, and every year that they're at the high school, that number is cut at least in half. And you look at our graduation rate, which has gone up 10% in the last 4 years, and a big boost in that has been these EL kids and the support that we've given them. So we're going there. We're not there, but we're getting there. And I'm really proud of the efforts of our staff, because they've done the hard work in the trenches to make sure that these kids, who I say, What a obstacle. I mean, they're coming here and they have to learn these academic skills that all of these kids do, while often while learning a second language and learning a second culture, and oftentimes without the support components that a lot of our kids have. And so the fact that they're finishing the race at the same time as these kids is, to me, is pretty remarkable.
That's it.
Thank you, Mr. Rodriguez. Anybody else have?
Yes.
Mr. Fry, I guess I heard you mention earlier something about a guide when kids come in with transcripts from either other states or out of the country. And I guess I wanted clarification on what is used to base, like, are we going to grant credit for Algebra 1? Are we going to grant credit for geometry? How do you determine where they're going to fall, whether or not they did receive the credit?
Well, the state of Texas requires, the law requires us to make sure that it is aligned with the text. And so that is our greatest guide. As a resource, we recently became part of a grant with a large number of schools in Texas, with Lucha, to assist us in that, because their resources of calling and going to schools and checking that and digging and unearthing all of that data to be able to make those comparisons is a lot more robust than what we have. But really, what we do with these students is what we would do with a kid from North Carolina. We call that school and we say, I have this course and I don't know what it is. I need a description. I need what is being taught there. And we lay those side by side and we match them up. And if that's too far off, then we say, I'm sorry, this does not equal this, and you're going to retake this class. You'll pass some of the skills, but you don't have enough skills to be successful and to take those steps up in your learning to be ultimately successful in high school graduates. So that's how we do it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cosgrove.
I would like to add, Mrs. Cutler's permission. I remember one day we were having a meeting with Mr. Fry, and he said, well, one of the advantages of the USA is that we know Mexico so much. Thank you to Mary Valenco. Mexico has different, for high school, they have different system. You know, they have bachilleres, they have the state system, the federal system, and CBETIS. So, math in bachilleres can be completely different than the math course that is offered through the federal system. Mm-hmm. And Mary Valenco knows all of this, and in the OPACO meeting, most of them already know this. So when the student is coming from the federal system, we already know it's very similar to a math. And when somebody's coming from the state system, we know that it's lacking a lot of skills.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was very helpful. Any other questions? Right. Yes, Ms. Quintana?
You were mentioning that you contact the school, correct? And then you try to match it up as best you can, correct? Do you require that the other schools send this to you in writing, or is this done via telephone? Or?
Well, I'll tell you, the best case is we have it in writing. But I'll tell you what, again, I'm not going to saw off a kid's legs because I can't get a school to send some, but we've had an official conversation with a reputable, you know, an official from the school has said this, and this, and we have documented that to put that in the student's CUNE folder. I'm not going to say, you know, just because your school won't do this, sorry, but you're going to pay the price. We really, that an official conversation with the school official can, and documentation can meet those expectations.
My other question is,
In addition to that, I mean, when we're having a lot of problems trying to find the transcript from Mexico, we contact UT Austin through Lucia or the Mexican consulate in El Paso. So they can contact the school system in Mexico and say, you know what, Kanti is looking for those records, can you please speed up the process and send it to us?
Now my other question is, the majority come in from Mexico, but say we get somebody from Japan or Germany, or is it handled the same exact way?
That's the exact thing that I told to our counseling staff, and I said, this is not a process for Mexico. This is a process for anyone out of country. And, you know, that's, you know, we're bound by the FD legal and FD local. And the fact is that we don't get a whole lot, but we've had students recently from Germany, and we had with military, and I'm trying to think of the one that we just had recently that was really kind of obscure for this area, and we went through this exact same process to say, this is what this is. And so I feel like it's, though we don't very often.
I know it happens, though.
It does happen. It does happen. And those are kind of like a challenge. We like those because they're new.
I would like to mention that we have a couple of kids from Colombia, a couple of kids from China, and one from Taiwan, elementary level and middle school.
Wow.
They are coming to you.
Mr. Coronado?
Thank you, Mr. Bryan. And the questions I have actually relate a little differently. The question I have is, what is our state law and our federal law required with respect to the testing of these international student transfers? Now, I know that it would be, unreasonable to require a school district that a transfer student coming in, say in March, is required to take our testing, our state testing examination that is given in April, right?
Yes, sir.
So what is the law required, that the state and the federal law requires with respect to the testing of these international students?
Well, we have three, we have two language proficiency tests in Texas. Federal accountability, we need to use the Stanford language proficiency test. I mean that's to place the students due to the federal regulation. And then at the end of the school year, the state accountability says you need to administrate the TELPAS, Texas English Language Proficiency System. So in English proficiency, we have the Stanford and we have the TELPAS. Academically, I mean, this is TA, I mean, and you're absolutely right, Mr. Coronado. If we have a kid coming from Mexico at the beginning level, 2 weeks before the start test, you need to take the start test in English. It doesn't matter about his language proficiency.
Right, and it's kind of absurd at some point, right? Excuse me? I mean, if you make a person take when you haven't evaluated, let's say you haven't even evaluated where they're at, and you're requiring them to take that test even if he's here 2 weeks before.
Yes, sir.
Right.
No exception.
Whether you even know what level he's at.
In the previous year, the state allowed us 1 year exception. In 2-3 years, we never take the advantage more than 2 years. I mean that would be just too much for County USD. Most of our kids after the first year, they were taking the state accountability battery. But now it's with the new start test. I mean, it has to be no exception at all.
And they can take a linguistically accommodated test.
That's my next question.
Yes.
Are they going to be taking it in their language?
They'll be taking it in English, but they will get accommodations, and those are forms and dictionaries and formal accommodations with the test.
And what other accommodations in terms of the time frame on
the guideline? Well, a lot of people say, okay, linguistic accommodation is going to support, you know, the performance of those kids, but actually it's just a dictionary. You can raise your hand and say, I don't understand this word, and the only thing that you can do is, this is the meaning of this word, and extra time.
And so that's something that probably the state needs to work on, right? You would agree?
Absolutely. I would say that it definitely puts these kids in an unfair
disadvantage. We require them to take
and ultimately, test. You know, puts schools at a disadvantage who have a large a number of students that are in this scenario. You know, we have a lot of kids that are, you know, come and go, and then we have the kids that are here for the first time. If we have our hands on them long enough, I feel like we do a really good job. But the fact is that their home country is their home country, and when they go home and they come back, they create gaps. So I'll tell you that in the past, to 10th grade, the LAT, linguistically accommodated text, is a participation. It's a participation evaluation. It's not they passed or they failed. For the campus for our campus accountability, it is were they there? And our kids are there 100%. They're 14 for 14, and they're there this year. You know, it's so for us, it's not a situation where their test scores hurt us. It's we want them to be able to be successful, and that way, the next year they'll be taking for these kids, the last generation of the exit level CATs.
Right.
So get that data to use. Yeah.
During the time that you've been there, Mr. Fry, has happened to you ever gotten a situation where they've not followed law in terms of allowing these transfer students or requiring these transfer students to take the academic test that's required?
Oh, absolutely not. Okay. Absolutely not.
All right, but that's one area where I think the state probably needs to take a look at. And that might be something that the board needs to take a look at before our July deadline.
Yes.
Has been as something that maybe they need to reevaluate.
An excellent suggestion.
They've created the accountability systems at the state and the federal level that are really one size fits all. And it really puts, I think, a lot of pressure, undue and unfair pressure, on especially English language learners to be at the same proficiency as someone who's, you know, native language is English.
I agree. Thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you. Any other?
I have a question. And you keep referring to LUCHAP. Can you explain just what LUCHAP stands for?
Well, I can tell you what it's not. It was not a wrestling thing. Lucha is, I'll put it, because he'll get into really technical stuff. Basically, it is a business that sets up and it's a clearinghouse. They clear all credits from foreign countries. So what they'll do is this. They are not somebody who says, this is what you have to do. What they do is they say, here's what the student has, and here's what the closest connecting course in Texas is this. Matematicas 3, Algebra 1. That's what we recommend. It's only recommendations, again. So what they are is a bunch of, I don't know, I have a picture of them, that there are a bunch of people on the phone all the time where they've got ambassadors going out to these schools, and they're like detectives who are saying, I have this course, and I need to know what it means for your campus. And so they do a lot of legwork that obviously we don't have the capacity or manpower to do. And it's a pay-for service. It's about $350 per kid. Right now TEA is saying, let us help you out, and we're a part of a grant for this year. So what we're trying to do is glean as much information from them and use it for guidance for our own in-house evaluations to continue to grow and learn about what they're finding. So I don't know if that answered your question of what their purpose is and what they do to support us in deciphering transcripts.
So what we do is we send the transcripts for them to audit and have to see.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
or we can request them to, if the student cannot bring it to us and we call the schools and the schools giving us some obstacles, which are Mary Marengoya, make a phone call and say, Lucia, can you help me to get this transfer? One of, like Mr. Fry was saying, I mean, we know Mexico so much. Think about in a school district in Texas that nobody speaks Spanish, so for them it's almost impossible to contact any schools. So that's the big issue.
Can we ever use Region 19?
They don't provide this type of, but no. They used to, I remember a long time ago, they used to do it. But since like Mr. Friday was saying, they only can make recommendation. It's up to the school district based on local policy.
Thank you.
Mr. Fry, could you possibly, I know you spoke on this a bit, but could you speak to us about other districts in Region 19, not other districts, other schools within districts in Region 19? Do you have knowledge that they do, what I'm hearing from you is that everybody does business differently?
They do. Everybody has their processes that they follow, and my hope is that they're doing what they believe is best for the mm-hmm. individual student with a very systematic process. But we've come across some instances where a student is coming from, I don't want to name, but they're two different districts, one big and one little,
uh-huh.
and the students have come to us, and we're looking and we're saying, wait a second, how in the world did you evaluate this way? Because they've done different evaluations. So it's really open to interpretation. But once okay. it's transcripted, it's there. We have to accept it.
Okay.
But we've had some problems because some concerns. I won't say problems because we've said, wait a second, I don't know that they've put this student in the right placement on the best course to graduate in 4 years.
So and just
so,
from
so there are some differences
and, coming and within Region 19.
Within Region 19,
okay, that you found
and
differences
the face of those kids that came from those schools, and that's the situation where we're trying to tell them, yeah, you're expected to graduate next June, and they're looking they're saying, I gotta do all this, and I gotta
outside of EPISD, there's other districts.
Yes, this one is from way, way, way that way.
Okay, but we won't ask any fingers to be pointed or name. And what I'm hearing from you also, and I know this to be true because I remember when Mr. Del Campo came on, this was back in the 90s, and I was on the board. I was a stickler for this, and that our LPAC committee was going to be a good committee, that they were going to do the right things for children. And I think over the years, I've seen it grow and flourish, and I feel very, very happy with what we're doing in Kenya Teal, from my knowledge. And now from hearing you all this evening, give us an overview. We have a legal policy that we follow. We thought enough of that. We have a local policy that we wrote and we implement. And we also have local regulation. Am I correct in all of these? And we have an active LPAC committee, which meets every 6 weeks?
No, that's
every 8 weeks?
We are once a month, but he's talking about we do a 6 week
evaluation. Okay.
6 weeks.
So
we do an additional
We care. We care, and we want these children to succeed very much is what I'm hearing. And that district wide we're adhering to the policies that we have set. I have one other question to ask you. Has Dr. Murphy ever directed that students remain in a single grade level, ninth grade, when the student transfers in from another school district or country?
Ma'am, if there was a Bible here, I'd put my hand on it, and I would say absolutely not. You've
thank you very much.
I
sure thank you for your answer, and I thank the board for the transparency we've seen tonight. Ms. Mendoza?
In addition, I'm sorry.
Yes, sir.
From the perspective from Academy Level Services, 100% of the meeting that I had with Dr. Murphy on my department is what's best for the students at time.
Very good.
This is not what's best for us, it's what's best for them.
Thank you.
And I've been here for a long time, and I've had multiple roles, and as 10 years as principal, and so we have the whole gambit.
Yes.
Pre-K through 12 sitting here. And so this has been a process, as you said, with the, you know, Language Proficiency Assessment Committee and the LPAC. And also, I've been relatively new. I just came about 2 months before Dr. Murphy came to his position in school resources, which we have to follow the PEAMS guidelines, the student attendance. And we look and watch and at all the kids. We have to look at accountability. We're the ones that do the testing to make sure the participation rate. We help with the AEIS. We look at the, you get, the state gets their AEIS report from the information that I give to the state. So it takes a partnership of all of us. You know, if we see something, if I see something, I would go to Mr. Fry or I go to Mr. Del Campo. What is going on here? So it's a
check and balances.
Yes, absolutely. There's checks and balances, and there needs to be.
Yes.
It helps that have a 10-year kind of building to look at this information that I can. But you have to pick up the phone and you look at that. You run the reports. And, you know, we have a system that Mr. Fry is excellent on the teams. I mean, he's the one that has kept me challenged as far as writing reports for students so that we can get the information needed.
Thank you very much. Ms. Mendelson?
I have just two questions. Mr. Fry, I know that you've been asked over and over about counselors. I know every year we have new counselors come into our school system. The registrar and the counselors, we have counselors that have been with us a number of years. Do they receive special training on the evaluation of transcripts, form transcripts?
They do. Really, we, you know, and I, as I met with them and spoke to them about this, they are not trained in the assessment of foreign transcripts. We have been fortunate and blessed because of your support with an ESL facilitator who is really our constant one set of eyes that is keeping us systematic. And it is a collaborative effort because they do sit down to build a student schedule. To answer your question, you know, that's something that I think this district, if I can make a sidebar, you know, our counselors, K-12, do need to continue to have some leadership from central offices as far as a counseling expert, a lead counselor like they have in other districts. We get a lot of our information from our colleagues in Region 19, the other school districts in Region 19, who cross-train our counselors for free because of their knowledge of counseling and love of counseling. But the training, we do give them specific training through Region 19 and transcript assessments and evaluations and audits and processes, but they are not the primary ones for foreign transcripts.
Thank you.
Sure.
And Mrs. Mendoza, in addition to what Mr. Fry just mentioned, the counselors, they are an important part of the LPAC community. They need to be there every 6 weeks, listening to all the members of the community. They also need to receive the previous training in order for them to be part of the LPAC community. Not only the counselor, but also the administrators, the assistant principals.
Because ultimately, they're the ones that are responsible for the schedule and responsible for the credit audit that leads to graduation. That's what their degree is, that's what you've charged them with, and so they take that very seriously. But we rely real heavily on that team along with our ESL facilitator.
Mr. Fry, am I correct in also saying that one of the reasons that we have a bone, if you will, a carrot, is that we get money from the state to place these children correctly and have them accelerate at a rapid rate. Am I correct? At the correct rate? That through our comp ed and our state bilingual?
Well, the fact that you get an English language learner is one of the 13 criteria for at risk. So yes, that it would be the state comp. Yes.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Rodriguez.
One of the main goals of the bilingual education in Canada is to see the students performing outstanding in mainstream.
Yes.
So I have several conversations with my top administrators, and we never mention anything about money. Everything is about, do you want for them to walk and to get a diploma?
That is excellent.
Any wickedness, my?
Whoa.
Okay.
No, but I want to tell you that I think we effectively manage the money and the resources with tutorials and support. So I'm just kidding. But I really think that state comp ed fund do come in.
Absolutely.
And I hope they continue to support.
Thank you.
Kids.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Just real quick, I just wanted to close. I believe when looking at the issues that arose and taking a fresh breath of what we're seeing here, and knowing that Canotillo has and will continue to create a culture of high expectations and strongly believe in accountability, we've always worked for, you know, the right reason for kids, and it's good to see the information that was provided is that what we're doing here in Canotillo is great things, and we're going to continue. There's always room for improvement, but we're going to continue to do those great things. The other issue is that we're being the most transparent to the public and to the community to make sure that we have this open dialogue and making sure that there's accountability, whether it's us or anybody else. So I thank the administration for presenting and bringing some of those information that we knew we had on the books, but it's we know that we're doing the right thing when it comes to that.
Yes, Mr. Coronado.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I know the focus of this was the international students, but you've outlined how our international students, when they come in, they could be in ninth grade or get behind it. They're placed back again in ninth grade again because they didn't get all their credits. That happens to our local students too.
Absolutely, and I'll tell you this, with your support and the programs that we have in place, part of our reason why we've increased our graduation rate, our completion rate by 10%, is that we're not standing for a kid to fall behind. I mean, we have a team that swoops in and is saying, this is what you're going to do, this is what we're going to help you with, and you will be back there alongside your classmates on that stage, and this is how we're going to get you there. And so, it isn't just an international foreign student problem. It's a kid born, three blocks from our high school. But I really feel like we're doing a very good job of making sure they get back on cohort.
Right, and though for those students that are, that they're already have English as their primary language, they fall behind. We're doing the same things to make sure that we can catch them up.
Absolutely.
But have you had anybody direct you to say that you want to promote students from the ninth grade and skip the 10th just so that they don't take their 10th grade test?
No, that's one of those things that you you know that you have to be real transparent there. And any kid that has gone from ninth grade to 11th grade or 10th grade to 12th grade is because they're part of an intervention to get them back on cohort. Not to skip over anything or hide anything, but to get them back with the kids that they belong with in the class that they belong to graduate.
Has Dr. Murphy ever directed you to do something like that?
No. His thing has been, your charge is to make sure that kids graduate and graduate on time. And our work has been to identify what we need to do as a campus to make sure we support our kids so that every single one of them gets to walk across the stage in Eagle Stadium on time.
What do you think of Dr. Murphy's leadership since he's been here?
I absolutely, and I'll tell you this, and those of you who don't know, I'll be leaving in June, and I thank you for this opportunity to be here. And I will be taking a position in the central office, and I've learned a ton of things about leading a district and putting systems in place of checks and balance and monitoring to ensure that we're doing the right things and that we're doing them in the right way. I don't feel like I've ever been asked to do anything for the right reasons, and I don't feel like I've ever been told to do anything that I've been uncomfortable with. He's pushed me, he's questioned me, but I really respect what he's done for me personally in my advancement of learning, and also for Canisteo High School in this district. So absolutely, I'd work for him again any day.
Yes, Mr. Tillman.
You mentioned two accountability systems, the federal accountability system and the state accountability system. For federal, in regard to bilingual education, we have the amounts to measure progress in English. For the first time in too many years, Canotillo ISD, for the first time, under the directive of Dr. Murphy, we met all the amounts. Federal portability, we are perfectly fine. On PBMAS, the state accountability, the one that gives us negative points, since Dr. Murphy came to Canutillo, we had 13 negative points, we went down to 7 negative points, and now we have 5 negative points in our system. The lowest negative points in the whole area.
Excellent.
The lowest school district on the state accountability in the area. One of the things yeah. that I received is yes, if we want to implement a bilingual education program in Canutillo SD, we need to respect the non-negotiables. When that's the week in English, instruction is 100% in English. Mm-hmm. Instruction in Spanish, instruction 100% in Spanish for that week. So, state of their accountability, we're one of the best districts, not only in the Paso area, but like in the whole state of Texas.
All right.
And they keep trying to throw more at us.
Yeah.
And we keep hitting them.
Any other questions or comments? I have one last question. Mr. Fryer, are you going to do the splits at graduation this year?
You know what?
It is on your evaluation.
Unfortunately, I don't think the students would have it any other way.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Fryer.
Thank you for the presentation.
Thank you. Thank you for your time. Tony, that takes us to number four.
Number four is executive session, and the time is now 7:03 p.m., and the meeting is to be closed for discussion with and receive advice from the legal counsel regarding district policies for student placement, audit, and review of transfer credits, and testing policies and procedures.
Sure.
Do we need to do anything?
I don't think we need anything. So you want to? I think everybody's happy.
You guys can have dinner, I think. Don't
they? That's
you guys
all.
Want to go back there and eat, and then come back out for your committee meeting.
Yeah, I'll go talk to them and do that. Okay.
I'm not staying for the meeting.
No. All right. That's he does. I make him go every day. Don't tell him he's not supposed to. Oh, I remember you. Yes. Yes, sir. Absolutely.
But,
oh, I would be so thrilled to. He will be very happy.
Nice to see you, sir. Oh, nice to see you. Good, and you?
Good. Nice to see you.
Yeah, I will always wait to tell him. He'll be so happy to be here. Yes, sir.
I retired.
I think he's kind of
getting off the horse. That was enough for me.
He'd like to retire.
Yeah. I'll just go off and I moved over here from Clint.
Oh, I'm so happy.
And,
come on up.
I don't like
apart.
This city too well.
We hate this city. Well, I'll just tell you straight up. We hate the
best. Yeah, I'm getting used to it.
Thank you for coming.
I didn't know that they were so interested in us being a Bobcat.
She goes first.
I feel that the community changes, parents, and This is, you all have to come back in graduation. Honest to goodness, it doesn't let us.
Now 7:15, still on May the 2nd, 2012. The board is convening back into public session, and there is no action to be taken on agenda item number 4. And we will take a short recess between this meeting and our committee meeting. Thank you very much. I didn't bring back any of